This is Caregiver's Compass, an uplifting podcast all about the ins and outs of caregiving for a loved one. Tips, tricks, true stories, and experts. It's all here on Caregiver's Compass. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Caregiver's Compass. My name is Stephanie Muscat. I am a registered social worker and psychotherapist. Please note that this episode is not the act of psychotherapy. What happens if you are caring for a child, you're caring for a parent, a sister, a brother, and you are also caring alongside someone that you don't get along with? This can be a partner, an ex-partner, a sibling. How do you navigate care and putting the values and the needs of the person you're caring for at the forefront while you are potentially fighting with the other person that is also providing care? You have had a break in your relationship. What do you do in these circumstances? This is really difficult, and I wish I had some sort of magic answer here, but the truth is that I don't. I can say what other people I've worked with have found helpful, and I'm going to also provide a real-life case example of a family that I have worked with in the hospital. Obviously, keeping things confidential, changing around some of the circumstances. But I wanted to include a case example as well because I think it's useful to see what has happened in people's real lives too. Whatever situation you're in, I want to acknowledge the difficulties in this, and I want to say that there are ways to navigate this. It does take strategic planning and a lot of regulation of what you are feeling, which can be so hard when there is a very difficult, potentially volatile history with the other person involved. If you don't meet eye to eye, if you don't see things at the same level, that makes things so much harder. And if you are caring for somebody and you disagree on many of the fundamental decisions, that makes it even worse. And nobody needs more stress than they already have as a caregiver. So I'm going to talk about this real life example. And in this example, I was the inpatient social worker in the hospital for this family. And it was a parent of a gentleman who was in his early 20s who had injured his head. And we do see a lot of head injuries in my hospital. We are a higher level trauma hospital, and a lot of people come to our hospital when other hospitals cannot take care of the level of care they might need. So in this situation, this gentleman in his early 20s injured his head, and he came in with an acquired brain injury. And when some individuals have an acquired brain injury, they exhibit behaviors. They may be confused. They may have memory issues. This person could not understand why he was in the hospital, and he just wanted to go home. He did not know why we were not permitting him to go home, and he was very fixated on that. And so we saw a lot of exit-seeking behaviors, meaning that he was trying to exit the unit often, not understanding why he couldn't. He wanted to leave all the time, and he needed to have an observer with him so that they could make sure that he stayed safe, because he did still need to be on the unit. He has a brain injury, and he also required rehab for his brain injury so that he could hopefully work on rehabilitating from a cognitive standpoint, which is what we will sometimes do when somebody has an acquired brain injury. So his parent, his mother, is somebody that I was very involved with on the unit. She was on the unit day in and day out with her son. He lived with her, and she was struggling. Obviously, her son, who should be independent, thriving, he had just started his own business, was now in the hospital, confused, needing constant redirection, not acting like himself, crying all the time. Insanely difficult for a parent to see. I personally cannot even imagine. And she would also bring her emotions to the table, of course, and we had many meetings together. We would sit, talk about how she was doing, talk about the next steps in his care. She really wanted to remain hopeful. I knew that she had been separated from a partner, and I knew that the partner was involved in the son's life, but I didn't know the specific circumstances until they came up a little bit later on. And I had never seen the other partner come to the hospital, so I wasn't even sure if they were in their son's life. I just saw the mom. And so we had conversations with the mom about next of kin, who would make decisions on her son's behalf because he wasn't showing that he was cognitively capable of making those decisions. He did not have insight into his abilities. Again, he was confused, didn't know why he was in the hospital. And so his mom was the one making the decisions on his behalf. We didn't really pry into what had happened with the other partner. Again, they never showed up. And sometimes when that happens, we do go with the decision of the person who was present, given that it is their mother. But one day, the mother's ex-partner showed up at the hospital, had never seen them before, and started engaging with their son. And unfortunately, not aware of the specific details of the circumstances, the specific brain injury at hand, had not been having the conversations with the doctors, with the team, decided to do some questionable things on the unit and provide their son with questionable medications, herbal medications, but nonetheless that could impact the brain injury, and didn't want to talk to the mother about what had happened, had kept the herbal medications a secret, and our inpatient team just happened to find out about it, as did the ex-partner, who was the mom of the patient. And the mom of the patient was understandably extremely distraught because she's been in the hospital every single day. She's been engaging. She wants to see her son get better, continue on a trajectory of rehabilitation, and not want to do anything to impact his brain. And of course, her ex-partner also didn't want to do anything to impact their son's brain. They were seeing that their son was struggling and suffering and didn't want to see their son that way, and decided to provide them with herbal medications to calm down. But you always have to bring that up to a doctor because we don't know how that's going to interact with existing medications. We don't know what will happen to the brain with certain herbal substances, and it was done in secret. And the mom's concern was, how do I know that this hasn't been done every single day? How do I know how long this has been going on for? There are things going on behind my back. And it was a bit of a mess. The mother had many arguments in front of the son with the ex-partner in the room about this. And there's a lot of emotions involved here, of course. And her focus was on him getting better, his trajectory. But this obviously brought up a lot of old feelings from their separation, from their past, reasons that I am not privy to, that now she is dealing with as well. So not only is she going home at night and not able to sleep because she knows she has left her son, who is scared, who doesn't know why he's in the hospital, who is relying on his mother to be there to support him. But she is also now struggling with the difficulties with her ex-partner. And is he going to come and do something else that she doesn't know about that could potentially impact the trajectory of her son's recovery? So what happened in this situation is that, of course, each partner has a perspective. Each partner has a say. And as a team, we wanted to get the perspective of each partner. But of course, that wasn't just it, because they have to continue on as caregivers. They have to continue on as half of the parental relationship, even if they no longer speak. They need to work together. Now that we knew there was a partner involved, they need to jointly make decisions. There was no power of attorney in place. It was a very young gentleman. He had not drafted a power of attorney. And the substitute decision maker hierarchy states that it would have been both parents equally. There was nothing to state that one parent had sole custody. There was nothing to state there was a restraining order against one of the parents. And so therefore, they have equal playing field. Even if they don't disagree in their approaches, we have to try and come together to come up with a unified decision. So the first thing here is that the parents did not want to be in a room together. They did not want to speak to each other. And they still wanted to continue to care for their son, who they both loved very, very much. But they didn't want to be there at the same time. And what they were starting to come to the hospital with, which is very strong emotions, very strong opinions, fighting in front of their son, they soon realized that that was not going to have a positive impact on their son. And so by working with the team, it was decided that they create a visiting schedule. And so with mediation, perhaps, of a third party, in this case, it is important to come up with a solution that makes a caregiver feel the least stressed. And to them, that was coming individually without one another. And so the father decided he was going to come in the mornings and the mother was going to come in the afternoons. They didn't want to see each other. And that was what worked for them. And then the team was responsible for more so monitoring the situation, providing education to both parents about the impact of certain herbal medications, the necessity to have a consistent medical awareness, because clearly one of the parents was there more and had more knowledge, and the other parent was acting in ways that they felt was appropriate but was impacting their son. So we would create documents with a summary, a medical summary, which both parents agreed could be provided to the other so that they were fully up to date with what was going on. And then we were available to talk to them, because usually we have a point person, which might be one family member who will talk to the rest of the family members. In this case, they did not want to speak to each other. And so it is a lot of problem solving, but in this situation, we had medical updates provided. So if you might be in a situation like this, you don't want to see the person that you are potentially not getting along with, you feel that one person is not as aware of the situation as the other, you can ask the team if they can provide medical updates that are the same, perhaps on paper. Perhaps you can both be in a conference call so you don't have to see each other, but at least you're getting the same information and you're on the same page. So there was a schedule now. There were equal medical updates being provided because one person was there all the time and the other couldn't come as much, but they both needed the same information. And the final thing was that we had to have them together to make decisions. And the best way to go about this was not to have them talk on their own outside of the hospital, potentially argue, not get along, bring in perspectives that one may not have agreed with for the other. That wouldn't really get to anything, and it would cause more stress for both of them. So what we decided to do was create a very neutral space, and that would be my recommendation, is if you have to create decisions and come up to difficult conclusions with people that you may not be getting along with, to have a neutral space with multiple mediators who are also educated in the area, medical area perhaps, that you're looking to make a decision for, because then they were both able to come and they were making decisions that were solely based on fact about their loved one. There was no negative stuff or history coming into play of, well, I don't want this to happen because then our son is going to go live with you. And if your son goes to live with you, you're going to keep them away from me, right? It was all based on fact. So having a doctor in the room, a nurse, the manager of the unit, having both parents in the room, and the social worker created more of a neutral space where the business here is talking about the caregiver. It is not talking about the partners that don't get along. And that space allowed each partner to focus just on their son, to try and put their negative grievances and their negative perspectives aside for the time being so that we could focus on the son. And if things got out of hand or things started getting angry and it did not involve the son, but more so the history of the parents, we as team members are able to say, let's bring it back right now. Here is what we're focused on. We are not focused on, you know, an external relationship. We are focused on the well-being of your son. And these are the decisions we have to make. And that's why I would recommend having multiple team members, multiple mediators. That can be really important when having those difficult decisions, and keeping it neutral. Keeping it just, here are the facts and here are the decisions that we need to make. And ultimately, by going according to that and also having team members present to address emotional concerns, difficulties in processing the situation, we were able to make a decision that was the same with both partners. We were able to have them both aware of the circumstances, summarize situations in the hospital, keep them up to date on the medical situation, and ultimately he did go to rehab and is progressing, hopefully, to have the best possible outcome. So if you find yourself in one of these scenarios, the top takeaways would be scheduling so that you can caregive and not have to worry about the repercussions of the relationship, the history of the relationship. This isn't always possible to do, and I completely acknowledge that. But if you can, that is something I would recommend. Getting medical updates, medical information, the same information, so that you can't question each other, so that everybody is on the same page, and you're also up to date, so that everybody knows what's going on. And so that you don't have to be apprehensive about calling whoever it is that you're not getting along with to give them some sort of update that they may not even process, because there's a lot of anger there or a lot of emotions. And then the third one is having neutral meetings with other people involved, whether that's team members, family members that aren't involved, or who don't have a bias if possible. That is really important to make these sorts of decisions and to continue with the caregiving, which can be so hard in these circumstances, and which is always hard outside of these circumstances. So I hope you found this case example helpful. Again, every situation is different, every circumstance is different, but this highlighted a lot of the key issues that could arise in these very emotionally heavy, potentially angry heavy, grief heavy situations. If this resonates with you, let me know. If you have a similar story, please let me know. I always love talking to you. You can find me on social media at Compassion and Caregiving, and I will see you in the next episode. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to Caregiver's Compass. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review. Your ratings and reviews help more people like you find our podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and share this episode with someone you think would love it. I'm Stephanie Muscat. Have an uplifting day, and I'll see you next time.